Now, in the UK referendum campaign, I think if you were in the Leave or the Stay camp, I don't think anyone was actually singing the praises of the EU. In fact, everyone acknowledged there were many problems there. But one of the big animating issues, but also a very divisive issue, it did get very ugly, was the concentration on immigration. Oliver Hartwich is a leading intellectual. He wrote an essay last year called Why Europe Failed. And I thought it was rather timely to speak with Oliver about his reasoning. Oliver is also German, so he has that continental take on things. He's currently the executive director of the New Zealand Initiative, a public policy think tank. Oliver, welcome to Saturday Extra. Terrific to speak to you.
Good morning.
We will speak about immigration in a moment, but is Britain, from your point of view, just the first country to leave?
Well, that depends very much on how the European Union is going to react to Brexit now. If the European Union punishes Britain, if it makes it very difficult for Britain to renegotiate its positions with the European Union, that might well anger quite a few Eurosceptical parties in other parts of Europe, and they would then actually press and push forward for their own referenda. It is also possible, of course, that Britain manages to negotiate an orderly exit from the European Union while still retaining access to the European Common Market, for example, and therefore actually benefit from all the blessings of Europe and an integrated European market without having to take any of the downsides. If that works, and if Britain then has a success story, maybe 5 or 6 years down the track, that might again encourage other countries to reconsider their position with the European Union. If Britain becomes a success story after exit, then it might well be something that other countries would like to copy.
Okay, Oliver, but what does a success story look like and what does punishment look like, in inverted commas?
Well, punishment would be if the European Union now try to show to other countries what happens when you dare to withdraw from it. That would mean shutting Britain out of the common market, making it impossible for British exporters to access the market. At the same time, of course, this would really punish the European Union itself. They would inflict enormous damage on themselves by making it practically impossible for German exporters to, for example, export cars to Britain. So it wouldn't be in anyone's interest to do that, but it might just be the kind of punishment to send a signal to other countries that might consider withdrawing from the European Union in the future. Well, and a success story, conversely, would be if Britain manages to negotiate that orderly exit from the European Union, retaining access to the single market, but then being freed from the bureaucracy, from the regulations that come from Brussels, it could actually pursue different economic policies. It could pursue more liberal economic policies in many respects. It could deregulate parts of its economy. It could then also negotiate better trading conditions with other parts of the world. Think of Australia or New Zealand that currently the European Union doesn't really have. And therefore, Britain might actually be stronger a few years down the track. I mean, the immediate future, of course, will be turmoil in the markets. It will be extremely painful because the negotiations will be painful. But there is still a good chance that a few years down the track, all of this might actually be over, might be solved, and Britain would come out stronger than before.
Oliver, you referred there to the possibility of policies that were more liberal. Look, you're a liberal in the classical liberal sense, but you're also a very perceptive analyst here. This result out of Britain was not an embrace, though, of classical liberal positions, was it? I mean, there was a sense of protectionism here. There was an anger from the working class. This is not embracing a neoliberal vision, is it?
No, I think the Leave campaign was quite split in itself. There were certainly some classical liberal elements within the Leave campaign. Think of our friends from the Institute of Economic Affairs or the Adam Smith Institute, they made the liberal case for withdrawal from the European Union. But other parts of the campaign, think of UKIP, think of Nigel Farage, they certainly had other motivations and they played the race card, the immigration card. They certainly appealed to more protectionist instincts. And on top of that, you rightly point out that there were quite a few working class areas of Britain, or in Wales in particular, the southeast of England, as well, where people were just disenchanted with the political establishment and wanted to send a clear signal to the political establishment that they did no longer feel represented by it. So it was pretty much a protest, a revolt against political elites. So all these different developments came together in the referendum, and all three, I think, contributed to the Brexit result we have now seen.
The areas that voted very strongly in favour of Brexit, you look at them, they're in the north of England, a lot of them, the places where the car factories have closed. closed, where the steel foundries have closed, where the textile mills closed long ago, where the coal mines closed. It's very interesting because there's some similar currents here in Australia, a populist movement in South Australia with Nick Xenophon. These were communities that were heavily unionized and that were protected.
Yeah, I would probably draw the parallels a little bit further still. Look at what happened in the Austrian presidential election not so long ago, a few weeks ago, where a right-wing populist candidate almost got 50% of the vote, also based on the disenchantment of ordinary voters with the political establishment. Look at what's happening in France, where Marine Le Pen is currently in the lead, should it come to a presidential election. Look at the Donald Trump phenomenon. We are seeing across the Western world a growing disenchantment with political, the political class, the political establishment. And I think Brexit is pretty much one of these events in that line of the growing rise of populism.
Let's talk about the dark side of this, though. There was that horrible image of Nigel Farage standing in front of a poster that showed, in inverted commas, the hordes trying to get into Britain. It was a poster that bore a great deal of similarity to an image that came out of World War II. What was the ugly side of this campaign?
Well, as you just pointed out, that was the ugly side of the campaign. Not just this picture, though. A lot of the rhetoric, I think, was just over the top. I think there were too many ad hominem attacks on both sides of the debate. This was not the kind of political debate that you would like to see played out. It would have been much better to just focus on the issues and really sensibly discuss the future of Britain, the future of the European Union, the failings of the European Union, also the things that are good about the European Union. Instead, it turned nasty, it turned ugly, it turned personal. And then we saw some pictures that we rather wouldn't have seen.
David Cameron, I really do think, went to extraordinary lengths rhetorically when he suggested that leaving the European Union could lead to World War III. That may well have been rhetorical overkill, but wasn't the basis of the European Union, certainly it had an economic basis, but wasn't there a sort of a larger meta design behind it that Europe would never again go to war because it would be interlinked with trade? What happens now to that? Could there be tensions coming off the back of a weakened European Union?
Well, certainly there could be tensions coming out of it. And you're right, the historical foundations of the European Union go back to the post-war period. And it was the lesson drawn from previous conflicts, of course. I mean, there was the First World War, of course, that ended with the Treaty of Versailles, where Germany was punished. Previously, actually, there was the Franco-German War, 1870, 1871, where Germany did exactly the same in reverse to France. So out of all of these previous military conflicts, the Europeans in the immediate post-war period drew the conclusion that in order to avoid them, and to avoid a repeat of history, what they had to do was to unite. And that was the birth of the European Union. It was also, of course, something that happened in the context of the Cold War, the confrontation with the Soviet Union, when Western Europe tried to come together in order to form a bulwark against the Soviet threat. Now, times have changed, of course. We are now in the 21st century. The Second World War is a distant memory. I think we have different challenges. And I think seeing a repeat of these previous conflicts is not on the cards at the moment. I think we have moved beyond that. Unfortunately, the European Union has also moved beyond that. It has moved beyond the initial trade area, the idea that you bring European countries together by letting them trade freely with each other, which is a good idea, towards a more federalist Europe, towards a politically integrated Europe. I think these steps taken in the 1990s, the Maastricht Treaty, the establishment of European Monetary Union, were steps too far that Europe wasn't ready for, and I think all of these steps taken towards federalism, towards an integrated political union, are now destroying what was once good about the European Union, namely the focus on the common market, the four freedoms, the free movement of people, of trade, of goods, of services, of capital. And it's very unfortunate, I think, that we are seeing the European Union in the state that it currently is. It is very sad that it had to come to this British referendum. The European Union should have learned its lessons about its failings a long time ago.
Okay, yes. 10 years. Yes. It's Andrew West here on Saturday Extra, in for Geraldine, speaking with Dr. Oliver Hartwich. Oliver's the author of an influential paper released last year, Why Europe Failed. I encourage you to take a look at it. Oliver, just in the couple of minutes that we have left, you and I spoke last year when I was in the chair at Late Night Live, and we spoke about the enormous bureaucracy that has sort of blossomed in Brussels. In fact, it was a joke that you never knew which of the three or four presidents of the European Union you could get on the phone to sort something out. What happens now? Is there reform of that bureaucracy?
Well, there has to be reform. Just two figures on the state of European bureaucracy. The total sum of all European Union laws is 170,000 pages. And there are 10,000 European Union bureaucrats in Brussels that earn more than the British Prime Minister. This is a bureaucracy and a regulatory state of affairs that has simply gone out of control. This was part of the reason why the British have rebelled against it and why they are now voting in favor of Brexit. The European Union has to reform itself. It has to go back to what it was good at, facilitating trade. It should scale back on its political ambitions. It is not an organization that should morph into a European superstate. That was rejected in the Brexit referendum. It was previously rejected, of course, in referenda in France, in the Netherlands, when it came to the European Constitution that was on the cards 10 years ago. The European Union should take this as a wake-up call. It has to reform or it won't survive.
And Oliver, just very quickly, who's out next in the sense that you've got the Dutch talking about a referendum? I think the Danes have flirted with a referendum. And then there's discouragement or there's disillusion in parts of Eastern Europe.
Well, hopefully no one. What I really hope for is the European Union that learns the lessons, that reforms itself, because I would much prefer a reformed European Union to a European Union that's either overreaching or falling apart. There were some aspects that were really good about the European Union. We have to rediscover them now.
Well, certainly a lot to think about there. That is where we're going to leave the UK ramifications of the and the European ramifications of the Brexit vote. We've been speaking with Dr. Oliver Hartwich. Oliver's paper, Why Europe Failed. We'll put a link to that. Oliver, thank you for being with us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you very much.
And next, what's happening with our own vote? That's happening next week. It's time for the Election Express.